Now, back to Lansing's only live afternoon talk show, Ebling and You, on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And live in the studios of 1320 WILS, my name is David Brown, filling in for Jack Ebling this evening. And I promised you during our tease that we would be talking about ham, at least twice. And the first event of talking about ham has nothing to do with food, but something to do with radio, a perfect match for WILS, I suppose. And when I talk about ham, I'm talking about ham radios. And it's indeed a pleasure to welcome to the program a fellow I've come to know as a web designer, but also a bit of a ham enthusiast, a ham radio enthusiast. Please welcome Rick Mason. Hey, Rick.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
Glad you could be with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Well, first of all, for folks who don't know, you know, I can't imagine everybody doesn't know what an FM radio is and an AM radio, certainly. But what is a ham radio?
Well, ham radio are people that communicate with special bands that have been set aside by the government. It's a hobby, but it's also sometimes a training for engineers to learn how to build or engineer with radios.
Well, I suppose that really ham radio frequencies, ham radio operators were among the very earliest or the pioneers of the trade.
That is true. They're some of the earliest communicators were out there before they even were licensed.
And how did you develop your interest in ham radios?
I guess I started when someone gave me my first AM radio, and I started staying up late at night and trying to see how many different stations that I could hear, and someone gave me a shortwave radio, and I started listening to like the BBC or Radio Moscow. It had English broadcasts, and I just became fascinated by it.
And those were the days, I think, when the equipment was fairly simple, really not a lot to accomplish that task.
Yeah, I actually built myself my own crystal radio, and I don't know if they even have that in schools anymore. But, it, you know, I built several radios, and back in the days when it was all tubes, and you don't have too many hams building complete radio sets, although a large part of the hobby is still people that like to build equipment.
What is the attraction to ham radio technology and people who communicate with each other by ham frequencies?
It's really broad. You can't say it's any one thing. It's a hobby. You've got all these different people that have different interests, and yet they have that shared, I guess you want to call it a brotherhood. Some people, they just like to talk. They like to get on the radio and talk and meet new people, and other people, you know, they want to see how many different countries they can talk to. The hams call that DXing, which is old telegrapher's shorthand. Like I referred to earlier, some people like to build things. The minute they got one thing built, they don't even enjoy it. They want to go on and fire up the soldering iron and start building again. I got real interested in contests to see how many people I could talk to in a weekend and compete for trophies. And I've got a school buddy from Okemos, Bill Wing, W2PMH. Give him a shout out. He's into public service. He's working with the Red Cross if they need communications for a cancer walk, or he threatens to drag me out. They have a thing called Storm Watch where they actually help the Weather Bureau by going out and chasing storms and giving them information from the ground.
Well, really, you're serving a community service, I suppose.
I think that's one reason why the government has provided the frequencies, and there's always people that want to, you know, take those frequencies away and use them for commercial purposes. And I think it's a big reason why the government has protected and realizes there's value to the hobby.
Well, unlike broadcast or commercial stations, which are heavily regulated still to this day and have limits on the power a station might have, do ham operators have the same restrictions?
Yeah, they have limits on power and frequencies, and they have kind of like a code of ethics, as well as rules that the Federal Communications Commission, we've come under that. But the hams have done such a good job. When I started out, you had to take the exam at the federal building in downtown Detroit, and they had people who were monitoring the frequencies. If you got out of line, you'd get a notice, and the hams have done such a good job of policing their own that now it's all volunteer examiners. You can take the test in Lansing, and they will police the hobby so that the government doesn't have to.
I can recall science fiction movies and books and stories where the world may be on the brink of destruction, the end of the planet is near, something catastrophic has happened, and somehow, some way, it's the ham radio enthusiast that saves the day.
Yeah, we like to think that. I think that the fact that you have a little bit of knowledge and you have the practical experience, you don't have to be an engineering major to be interested in the hobby, and yet it's very useful knowledge to have, you know, through life.
Yeah.
Well, we've got so many electronic gadgets these days. To understand a little bit how they work and to be able to fix them is makes you very popular.
You talked a little bit about vacuum tubes, and I can recall my father collecting tubes and tube radios and big boxes that are incredible when you compare it to today's digital technology. How has digital technology affected the hobby?
I'd say it's kind of totally taken it over. There are people that do like to collect the old radios and operate them. In fact, there's a bunch of museums around the country. It's hard to see something you work with as a kid. It's in a museum. But it's becoming more questions of circuit boards as opposed to wiring harnesses that I work with when I was starting out.
Yeah. Is that what led you to your interest in web design, computer management?
I think that a little bit of that, there's always like a technical, I got a degree in journalism, but I ended up in gravitated toward the technical stuff wherever I was in my career.
For someone who might be interested in getting into the hobby and become a serious enthusiast such as yourself, what would it take?
What I would recommend, that there's a set of three licenses, and they're based on technical exams. The biggest thing is networking. We've got a really good club in the Lansing area called the Central Michigan Amateur Radio Club. They've been around since 1921, and they meet at the Salvation Army on Jolly Road in Lansing. That club has always, I think the reason they've survived and thrived is they've been smart about it. They have subgroups for women and for young hams. They call them the under-18s. And I can remember walking in there when I was like 14 years old. The last thing I wanted to do was hang out with some people 50, 60 years old. It scared me. But I could gravitate to one corner of the room, and there were kids my age. And in time, I found out that those older people that I did want to get to know them, that I could learn quite a bit from them. And there's also a national organization called the American Radio Relay League. It's known by the initials, mainly ARRL, and ARRL.org is a tremendous resource with information. And if you know a ham, we have in the ham world, we don't call them mentors, we call them Elmers.
Elmers.
Elmer, E-L-M-E-R.
Okay.
And my Elmer was a guy, the late, great Ben Hassel. And how he had the patience to have all these teenagers and guide them into the hobby, I do not know. But as I grow older, I more appreciate the job that he did, and there aren't many hams in the Lansing area that did not come of age during that time that didn't know Ben Hassel.
Well, Rick, where do you think the future of this hobby and the technology is going?
Well, you know, they're evolving. We've got new ways of communicating. You know, when I was starting out, it was Morse code and phone. Now they're communicating with satellites. In fact, hams are building their own satellites. They're bouncing signals off the moon. And wherever science is going to go is where ham radio is going to go. And a lot of times it's the hams are the ones pushing the edge, and the commercial industry follows their lead.
Well, that's fascinating. Hey, Rick, thanks so much for sharing with us a little bit about your passion for ham radios. And I know you're a very, very busy web designer and web fixer. You're very talented at that, and I appreciate the work you do for us over at Michigan State University. And thanks for the shout-out to your buds in the ham radio world.
Hey, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure, Dave.
Rick Mason is a web designer and a ham enthusiast. Thanks so much. My name is David Brown. This is the Jack Ebling Show on WILS AM 1320.